Brilliant. I think one of the things we've all, and I mean, it's been a conversation we've been having in the bar, if not in the sessions yet formally, but I've been saying to people all year that I'm as thin as a piece of paper. That is not literal, that's figurative. I think we're all feeling very flat, aren't we, and exhausted, and any number of other words that we think about because it's been such a relentless 18 months. And I think, and in parallel, and in, of course it's good timing, there's been an increasing conversation, I think, in the media, an increased profile given to mental health and trying to perhaps remove the word mental from that and just talk about health and talk about us holistically as people that have physical and mental health issues. It's very apt that at this point in the conversation, I think we do spend some time thinking about the issues that we all have, and I know we've all had these issues, particularly over the last 18 months, and I'm really delighted, and we've never had a partnership with them before, but we've had some fantastic conversations with Industry Minds. So for the next hour, we've got Mary Birch from Industry Minds going to be talking to us a little bit about some of the challenges. And again, interestingly, over the years at my BAF conferences, I've spoken, we've done sessions on things like the burnout cycle of festivals, and we all know that I always used to say working at festivals is a medieval torture rack because it got tighter and tighter and tighter. And actually for me, the worst part was not when the spring was the tightest. The worst part was when the spring let go and then you go, oh, hang on a minute, no pressure, no audience, no sponsor, no media, no staff, sometimes no money. And that, how do you regenerate yourself after the end of that cycle and get yourself the energy? And to me, actually, coming to BAFA was one of the things, one of the reasons I do this job, because coming here was one of the ways I recharged my inspiration and I recharged my battery and I gave myself the kind of boost I needed to get me through the next cycle. But I think all of those things have been exacerbated and changed and brought into sharp relief during this last 18 months. Mm-hmm. So it's a conversation that I very much welcome. So to introduce Mary, we've got Alison Giles of Prestine Festival and the BAFA Board. Thank you.
Hello everyone, and thanks for joining the session. Fiona has introduced Mary effectively, which is great, but Mary is a therapist and has been working with Industry Minds for 10 years or so. This is her first live face-to-face session for a long time, so we're very lucky to have her here. It's absolutely great. Mary's very kindly said that if you have a burning question whilst she speaks, do please feel free to put a hand up, but she will be taking questions later as well. And when we come to the end, we'll talk a little bit about how you can access Mary and the work she does from there on in. As Fiona says, it's been a very testing time. We all know that. The challenges of managing change and trying to see opportunity through what has seemed to be a load of challenge and threat. Dealing with uncertainty, dealing with the anxiety that stems from that, it's been a challenge to us all in different ways. But let's face it, there's a lot of those questions that were underlying in the way we all worked, even before COVID. I'm going to hand over to Mary now. Thanks for joining us.
And maybe if you haven't, good afternoon, everyone. And if you haven't heard of Industry Minds, please do have a wee look at the website and follow them. And just very briefly, Industry Minds was set up a number of years ago by two young actors. And one of them, Scarlett Maltman. Scarlett, when she came out of training herself, found that dip in her mental health, you know, all the promises that are made, all the work that will come your way. And that's not the way of it for a lot of young actors or writers, directors, whatever. With no one to talk to, no one to share. And then she met her friend, Kathy Reid, and the two of them, in talking, then had this shared, you know, this shared stress of the industry and decided, well, there's nothing there for creatives. Who do we talk to? And they set up Industry Minds, an award-winning podcast initially. There might be a few people here that could sign up to talk on that podcast for sure, names later. But also then setting up the therapy. I came in and volunteered with Industry Minds. And suddenly it's a full-time full-time work with Industry Minds, which is wonderful. You know, it's great work working with creatives and therapy. So they really have come so far. They also have an awards ceremony. They set up an awards ceremony. So please nominate yourselves, Alison, next year for that award ceremony. And again, just recognising, you know, organisations, charities, individuals who are, you know, sort of highlighting mental health, just like today. So so follow us on, I'll get a few brownie points if we have a few more followers after today. And reconnect, so straight in there, and I hate to use the word lockdown because I don't want to re-traumatise anyone, but lockdown, 18 months, and here we are. And we all had different experiences during lockdown. I bet everyone here had a different experience. What was your experience? You don't have to answer, you know, but feel free to answer. But, you know, just thinking to yourself, what was your experience during lockdown? Did you find that it was time to think? It was a time to recharge? A time to connect with yourself? That reflection, no distractions, not that busy, you know, that, as you're saying, Fiona, that tightening of, you know, it's just work, work, work. But just that time to let go with no distractions. Or was it a time of unease, a time of anxiety for you? You go, oh, who am I? I found that with clients, that what's my identity? If I'm not organising this festival, if I'm not doing this, who am I? So I wonder what your experience was. You know, some people, was that looking inwards? Did you look inwards and actually find a disconnect with yourself? And that's kind of what I'm looking at today, is that disconnect. What causes the disconnect that we have with ourselves? Why is it that one person would welcome that time with oneself looking inward and another person would struggle? Let's talk about me, all good therapists. No, the wrong thing to do, talk about me. I loved lockdown. I absolutely loved it because I'm very introverted, I'm very shy, and for me it was that no one was going to knock at my door, whatever, and I adored lockdown. But everyone's experience, I say, was different. Now we're slowly returning to real life, to face-to-face. As Alison says, this is my first time face-to-face with a group. All my sessions, all my seminars and training events have been online over the last 18 months. So what is it? And again, why? I wonder how you feel about face-to-face. You know, the possibility, the interaction with other people, back to with everyone there in the creative industry, back to acting, filming, producing, directing, organising, managing, and yet others are sitting there with that uncertainty, that anxiety, finding it quite difficult to cope with yet another significant change in their lives. And for every one of us, there's probably a different reason. We all experience life differently. We're all different. You know, it's that phenomenology that if we see someone who might see a car crash, for example, will go, oh, that's awful, and walk on. Another person seeing the same car crash can feel very traumatised. We all experience life differently, usually based on our own experiences of life as children. And that I'm very big on our inner child. And those experiences, the significant experiences, the people who have come into our lives as children, that they are the ones who have they determine our core beliefs, what we think about ourselves, how we see the world. All of that comes from childhood, how we cope with the difficulties. And those experiences as children or teenagers determine whether we see things through a positive lens or we see things through a negative lens. And I wonder if you sit here today, what lens do you see life through? Is it a positive one? Is it negative? Does it mix, you know, does it go between both? And I also wonder what beliefs you hold about you as individuals. Is it a wholly positive belief? Or is there something in there? Are there beliefs in there you hold about you that are less positive? And in fact, those less positive beliefs about you, that are they getting in the way of life? Are they getting in the way of your job? Do they get in the way of friendships, working with colleagues, family, your leisure time? And those messages that you tell yourself, the negative beliefs that you might have about you, are they true? I know my own. I have several negative beliefs about myself. One of them is not good enough. Yeah, quite a common negative self-belief among people. And that is mine. And that's my nervousness coming today. Go, oh, what if? Yeah. Oh, what if they don't like me? What if I make a mistake? What if it's not up to expectations? And there's the stress, the anxiety. So those negative beliefs you have about yourself, and let me just throw in there, it's not true, I'm good enough. Yeah? That's
it. Well said.
Well said. Yeah. But let me ask you, what does your inner critic say about you when you're juggling the pressures of festivals, whatever your job is, managing staff, when you're juggling all that, what's your inner critic saying to you, that voice? Or even when you feel sad, or you're feeling alone, when you're feeling lonely, when you're feeling left out, when everyone goes to the pub and go, no one told me where they were going, yeah? What's that voice that says? Is that voice going, well, oh, nobody likes me. Everybody actually dislikes me, you know? Oh, you always mess things up. You know, is your voice going, you're such an idiot? I remember doing an event down in London before, probably the last one, uh-huh, before lockdown, and a girl, and we were helping ourselves to tea and coffee, and she came and she spilled the little sachets of sugar, and she goes, oh, I'm so clumsy. I go, oh, I'm going to catch that later, when we were talking. But there was a belief about herself. And when we did talk later, she actually came to therapy, and we talked later, and there was that whole message from parents that she would maybe trip up on the rug and go, oh, you're so clumsy. Oh, mm, that's you. Of course, who's going to break the glass? It's going to be you that breaks the glass. Mm. And there's a belief about herself for the little things that we all do, but that negative belief. And that's how easily it can happen.
Mm. I'm just going to chip in there and say, yeah, I don't know whether anybody else is like me, but, you know, I can run a festival and 99% of it will go really well. It's the one thing or the one person who's being pissed off, yes, that stays with you. Anybody else? isn't it funny? Yeah. How does that happen? How do we do that to ourselves?
And with that, and I might say, like, but we're hardwired for the negative. Mm. And it's that, the lens that we're looking through, where 99% is wonderful, and then that one. Mm. And that's what we concentrate on. So it is, and the effect that has when you go, ah, but that one person, we'll look at the bad feedback we got from that one person. And that then drives the stress, anxiety, feeds that belief you have about you as well. Mm. So it is about recognizing that and finding a way to change it. And you will notice, yeah, just as you say, that inner critic never mentions the positives, never mentions the great things that you've done, just that one. So take a moment to look inwards, reconnecting with yourself, and listen to what your inner critic has to say about you. What is that? And as you do that, you don't need to share, absolutely not, but think about what your inner critic is saying, the words that they're using, and also, whose voice is it? Because quite often, you'll hear the voice of a parent, or a teacher, or a peer. Someone who said something. I was chatting to Alison, I know I'm interrupting your thoughts, but I was chatting to Alison earlier, and I find working with a lot of creatives, perhaps at drama school, where that one, you know, that one person who's going, yeah, and go, yeah, you're okay, but you've not got the face for the West End. Yeah. And I don't mean you, by the way. You've obviously got a, you have a wonderful face for the face for the West End.
You so have, Justin. I mean, come on.
But can you see, and there it is, that belief that's created about either their body, their looks, or whatever, and that's the voice that they'll hear. And you go, oh, that's because you're not this. Yeah, you're not that. So look inwards. What does your inner critic say to you? Whose voice is it? And again, if we're sharing, I can hear my father's voice. And I remember as a child, we were very poor growing up. Oh, yeah, but you know, it was, we had a coal fire, which is not very PC nowadays, of course, but we had a coal fire, and my job as a child was to light the fire in the morning. And I can already hear the emotion in my voice when I think of that. And of course, you know, coal was expensive, etc. Kindling was expensive. And I don't know if anyone ever remembers that or just, you know, that. And you put the newspaper over to help it catch, And if it didn't catch first time, you know, then, and that was my dad's voice, they go, oh, you're useless. You're no good at that. Yeah. And there it is. And I know that's not true. But already I can feel it touches that inner child and the emotion that the inner child felt at that time. And that's what, you know, that I'm asking you, look inwards, you know. And then ask yourself, well, how true is that message? How true is it that I'm useless? And I know I'm not. I might not be brilliant at everything, but I'm not useless. So say to yourself, how true is it? Just because someone says something doesn't make it a fact, doesn't make it true. And if when you're going like that, so when you're asking yourself that, you go, well, how true is it? What's the evidence? You know, if I go, what's the evidence that I'm useless? And I go, well, there isn't any. Do you know, there is no, in fact, on the contrary, there are evidence that shows I'm pretty good at some stuff. Yeah. And that's it. So it's challenging that inner voice, not believing it. Yes. The child believed it because the child, if you listen to whether it's parents or teachers or your friend in the playground, your tutor at college, at university, and that because they're in, you know, they have that power almost. And we trust these people. So what they say must be true. If they say that about me, it must be true. But it's not. But as adults, the minute that's triggered, the minute that negative belief about yourself is triggered, then you're right back to the inner child and the emotional brain jumps in. So if you feel yourself going, well, I feel, if that's your sentence, oh, well, I feel I'm not very good at that, or you go, I think, that's not evidence, that's a feeling, yeah? And feelings are important, but they're not fact. Thoughts are just thoughts. So it's about challenging those beliefs you have about yourself, whether it is that I'm clumsy or whatever. Is your inaccurate, and as adults, is that inaccurate, negative voice getting in the way of what you do in your job, in your life, so say in your relationships? And I'll say to you, well, find the evidence that supports the opposite of what you believe, that you're great, you're good at what you do, okay? We all make mistakes, and that's okay. It's fine to make a mistake. Look at your successes. Look at your achievements, yes? And realise, well, no, you're not such an idiot, you know? You're not such a disaster after all. That's what we should be concentrating on, the successes and the achievements. But then you go, well, okay, that's great, Mary, but what's importance? What's all that about? And you go, well, those past experiences, those core beliefs about you feed into your self-esteem, the belief you have about you and how we cope in the adult world. So those past experiences are important to recognize them and work to change them. How we deal with change how we deal with uncertainty, how much resilience we have in the jobs that we do in life, and how that resilience helps us through the difficulties of life and work, all go back to the beliefs that you have about you. Those negative beliefs that just are eroding away your self-esteem. So let's look at change. Yeah, oof, gosh, we've had 18 months of change. We're constantly in change. Some love change. Ooh, you know, they thrive on it. I wonder if anyone here thrives on change. Again, you don't need to share. You can smile. But others will go out of their way just to avoid change, don't like it. And yet, we have a life that's full of change, constant change. And creatives, the work that you do especially, do you know, deal with change on a day-to-day basis. Lockdown, as we know, brought so many changes to our lives. Festivals that went online, yeah? Dealing with each other through Zoom. Who ever heard of Zoom before lockdown? Or was that just me? Yeah, and then suddenly. But there was a change, and we learned to cope with it. You learned, you know, that you found a way of getting your work out there, of keeping things ticking over. We deal with change absolutely every day. Sometimes we know that change is coming. Sometimes, well, it takes us by surprise, a bit like lockdown. So where do you sit with change? Yeah, what are your thoughts? Do you try to avoid it or do you embrace it? And we are all different. Being able to deal with change, not avoiding it, being able to deal with it is about resilience. It's important. You know, one of the first things, you know, I'll say to clients is rather than that stress or that anxiety, the worrying about things, is control what you can. And there's the resilience. Instead of worrying about the things that are out with your control, you know, over lockdown we go, okay, you know, festivals are not happening, venues are not open. And you go, okay, what can you control? You can perhaps control by putting something online, by keeping that connection. And that's how we deal with change, by not sweating about the stuff that no one can do anything about or you can't as an individual, but control what you can. And there's the resilience that's there. Learning to cope with change is it lowers the risk of depression, lowers the risk of anxiety. So it is really important. Whereas if you don't, if you just sort of that change is there, it feels overwhelming. And I'm not picking on Fiona, but it's that, who I'm sure deals with change perfectly, but it's that coiled spring. It just builds up and builds up, whatever it is. Not just about change, workload as well. So, and I go back to that, those thought processes you go that, you know, is your mind straight to the negatives, you know, to those unhelpful thinking habits. And I wonder if you have any of these unhelpful thinking habits, black and white thinking. Do you know, it's either right or it's wrong. There's no grey. There's no middle ground. And that's feeding stress. That's feeding anxiety. Do you catastrophize? Do you know, if you think of what has been happening over the last 18 months, you go, well, that's it. There'll never be a live festival again. Oh, it's all going to be online. And then what, you know? We're not going to make money. We're all going to be poor. So that's catastrophizing. Again, unhelpful thinking. Do you find yourself with that I should or I must? Those rules, you go, well, I should be able to do better. I should be able to manage this. Who says? You know, is there a rule somewhere that says you should? And if you look back, you know, if you sit with that and look back, there will be a reason why you speak to yourself with, I should, I must. There's also that mind reading where we think what someone else is thinking, or the crystal ball where we predict how the outcome of something. And if that's you, you know, are any of these your unhelpful thinking habits? And recognizing those and hopefully deciding to change them because that's what's feeding the stress, that's what's feeding anxiety, that's what's building up to low self-esteem. And if you stop and you breathe and you say to yourself, well, how rational, how true are these thoughts, you know, that the end of the world is coming, you know, catastrophizing because of lockdown. And I'm not saying that you pretend that everything's great, everything's fine, that there aren't problems to overcome. Absolutely not. What I'm saying is trust your resilience. Trust the skills, the strengths, you know, the experience that you have in life that's taken you through so many difficulties. Trust your own resilience that will take you through, instead of going to that one, you know, that one negative, etc. You're remembering, how have I managed all of this before? Give some thought to a past difficulty that you've experienced. So think to yourself, what is a difficulty that you've faced before? And that might be around the work that you do. It might be something personal. Yeah, it might be around a friendship. But think of a difficulty that you've faced. And then say to yourself, well, what helped you through that difficulty? You can picture a difficulty in your mind. What helped you through it? Was it colleagues? You know, what was it, friends? Was it family? Was it your own inner strength, your determination, your skills, your knowledge? What helped you through that? And that any difficulties, and there's your resilience, yeah? If the next thing that comes your way, the next difficulty, is instead of going, oh, the negative thinking and building up that stress, that anxiety, is being able to deal with it and go, okay, well, how did I manage before? What strengths, what skills did I bring? Who helped me in the past? And facing it in a positive way, and we cut out the stress, cut out the anxiety, or at least reduce it. Yeah? Trusting yourself, trusting the resilience that every one of us has. In fact, if there are childhood experiences that were difficult, find that they actually help you build resilience. Lockdown has helped us build resilience. Dealing with that. So trust that resilience that you all have, and that's what will help you through. That's what you call on, yes? You don't call your stress, you don't call your anxiety, you call on your resilience to help you through whatever is coming next. Focus on those strengths, yes? And that, and you'll deal with whatever is ahead. Seeing change as an opportunity, and I'm not saying we just, you know, we look through everything through rose-coloured specs, but finding the opportunities in change as opposed to something that you're afraid of, yeah? Change is inevitable. My goodness, you know that you come to the hotel, they might go, we're changing your room, we're changing the menu. They change the bus routes, the train routes. We deal with change absolutely every day in our life, and we don't notice it, yeah? And it's all of those skills that you deal with where you go, yep, doesn't bother me. Because you can deal with change. And it is how you deal with it. Again, it's that experience. You can make it better or you can make it worse by how you react and by your attitude towards it. See the opportunities. If it's a change of venue, does that mean more visitors? Does that mean to know that more people can get there because, you know, there are better transport links? Any of that? See that, see the opportunities. And of course, there's a stress and perhaps an anxiety that sits with those change. Even a positive change, you know, moving house is positive. Having a baby, a new job, yes, is a positive change, but there's still a little bit of stress and anxiety that come with that. And that's okay, yeah, it's fine. What I'm saying is don't get trapped in the negative thinking, yes? Control, back to that, control what you can. Remind yourself of your resilience, the strengths, the people, the help you called on before, all of that to help you through any problems. But what about that strength, that anxiety that we all deal with? How do we manage that? Well, resilience is the ability to face life's challenges, yes, and actually maintain your own mental well-being. So that, first of all, that's that resilience. But let me ask you, what do you gain from worry? And you can answer that. How does worry help you? Is there an answer? Well, the answer is that it doesn't, and you know that. Worrying doesn't resolve anything, it doesn't change anything. All worry does is rob you of a good night's sleep. So what's the point, do you know? Because that worry is, and I know, and you're laughing, and you go, yeah, but we worry, do you know? But it does. It doesn't change anything, it doesn't solve the problem. So why do we do it? And sometimes when people... We are worriers. We're creatures of habit. You know, we like our routines. You know, we like our patterns, our rhythms of life. And worry does get in the way. But sometimes I'll say to clients, well, you know, it creates that stress. If you're sitting, it gets in the way of your day, perhaps, of enjoying life. And sometimes I'll say to clients, well, don't ignore it. Obviously, there's something there. But have a worry time, do you know? Set aside a time in the evening, doesn't have to be long, 6 o'clock to 20 past 6, 6 till half past 6, and there's your worry time. You can fret all you like about the problem. Yeah. Still not going to resolve it if it's not within your control, but that's it. But it means it's not interfering with your day, because throughout the day when you go, oh, what about? And you go, that's fine. I'll deal with that tonight. And you get on, you allow it, you're not ignoring it, you're not driving it down anywhere, but you're just letting it pass away and go, I'll come back to you tonight. Yeah, and it works. It's worth a try, rather than your whole day or those sleepless nights, yes. Some people like to journal. I don't know if anyone journals. Does anyone journal? No. But journaling can help if that's mm-hmm. if that's your thing. Yeah. Alison, have you journaled in the past? Yeah.
No. I'm adopting worry time though. I love that.
Love it.
And you know, it is such it works for me, and I do have clients who go, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it, and it's done. Your emotional brain can let it go for a bit. Yeah, for sure. But love journaling it. Is a similar thing yeah. where you can actually just write out. Fiona?
I was just going to ask, because I suspect I'm not alone, like, as an organiser. Many people in this room, I imagine, that I'm spending time in the
Right, and maybe that there's something about that switching off in your head, that it's about the control again, Fiona, that you go, well, what can you control in the here and now? Yes, and make a plan. Worrying isn't going to do it, so it's maybe telling yourself, okay, that won't change anything. What's the control I can take at the moment? Not sure if I'm answering your question, you really. But there's almost a discipline in that. We can get so caught up in worry, it becomes a way of being, that it's perhaps recognising that, stepping back from it, and being able to say, right, it is your own, you know, this is your organisation, you have all of these pressures, but putting it into, it's hard, not perspective as such, but finding a place, moving on, maybe recognising the three systems we have in our brain. Yes, we have our drive system, our threat system, and our contentment system. Everyone here, their drive system, I'm sure. Fiona, just what you're saying, that drive system is running 99 miles an hour, yes? As is the threat system. So the drive system is our doing, our ambition, all of that. Our threat system is the worry, yeah? Is the concern, is the responsibility, the fears, the financial fears, all of that. And that's our threat system. And I'm sure everyone's threat system is working perfectly, yeah?
For sure.
For sure. What I find is that people forget the contentment system. And the contentment system is our joy, is our fun, is having tequila at 11 o'clock at night, Fiona? Yes, that's it. Did I just give away a secret?
It was no secret.
It was no secret. But it is that, it's sitting, watching Netflix or having a glass of wine, just chilling, whatever that, and we need the balance. If we don't have the balance, if you're all drive, you're feeding your threat system. If you're all threat, you know, the anxiety is building and building. We need to have a little downtime, a little time free of worry, free of stress. Walking in the park, going for a walk, that connection with other people, all of the basics that we encourage during lockdown, that some nice food, you know, talking to people face to face, indeed, all of that, and we need it. And I find it the hardest thing to persuade creatives, anyone involved in the industry, that balance about contentment. You go, oh, but Mary, do you know, if I'm doing that, you know, there's emails I need to be looking at. And it's that trying to encourage people to see if you don't have the balance, then that's where your anxiety is increasing. So finding that, and I'm not saying you all go home and spend the next few days, you know, sort of binging on Netflix. Again, that's just going to feed your threat system because the word's not being done. Your drive system is going to sort of scream because, as well, you know, the work, you know, the drive, the ambition isn't being met. Find a balance, yeah? So maybe I think, Fiona, what I'm saying is just a little time to switch off. The world won't end, yes? It will still be there tomorrow, but prioritise, of course, but we just need that, yeah? And that's my excuse for playing Pokemon, by the way.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. I think there's something around also, isn't there? Not allowing yourself to do those things that enable you perhaps to function better, but recognising that they're enabling you to function better and not actually feeling guilty about them, guilty about, you know, saying, sorry, it's a weekend, I don't do email the weekend. It's allowing yourself that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's spot on, Alison, because quite often when I say that to a lot of creatives, and you go, you know, go watch Netflix, go have a pizza and watch Netflix. And once they can say to themselves, this is important, I'm rebalancing things in my mind and actually addressing any future anxiety, the guilt disappears because it's part of their job of keeping that good mental health. Yeah.
I find I've tried doing that. I've tried switching off and not having hours to get to the phone and that phones are a massive problem for them. Imagine not being able to send an email when an artist is pulled out or something, you know, after hours, it would just be mad. causes me much more anxiety not to just keep in touch. Okay, I might go and watch Netflix, as a user example. But I might just check my phone a couple of times while I'm doing it.
Yeah. I think it is also that sense of responsibility, isn't it, that Fiona alluded to. And I think, for me, part of that comes from, you know, I work with more than one organisation, so I'm not naming names here. But particularly working with one particular board I can think of, who are very well-meaning, lovely people, but they really haven't, they don't really know a lot of the basic nuts and bolts of the industry. So you do feel this incredible responsibility to actually try to lead a way through a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. And you feel that probably whatever you recommend is not going to be challenged or interrogated with quite the rigour that you might like to see. And that sort of turns the worry round again. Yeah. It sort of revolves that whole wheel of worry another time.
Yeah. And sorry.
I was just going to say that I think particularly during the lockdown days, it was, I work in a voluntary capacity, and our festival is run in a voluntary way, and there's no office, so we're all working from home anyway, so you think that might have made it easier, and that we all do work from home. But I found it really hard to switch off, because I have this constant chain of the what ifs, and I know that there's not a festival here who didn't have that, and the reimagining we had to do with returning. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about that clearing your desk before you can have time off? And I get the pressures of festivals and maybe a little bit different, but does the world end? Do you know, does it have to be in the here and now? Can it wait an hour while you go for a walk? I think that's my question. And there's a skill. That's the skill, is being able to, whether that's a negative thought or a worry, there is absolutely a skill into saying, I hear you, I see you, but now is not the time. If you were, I can maybe only put it down to, if I go with an actor, you know, or a performer that you're using, and they're on stage at the time and they're performing, and their phone goes. You know, they don't go, oh, I've got to deal with this email. I'll be back to finish the song in a minute. Do you know, it's being able to, and I know that, I don't mean that in sort of, in a silly way, but it's exactly that, where you go, you're not ignoring it, you're just putting it aside for a short time while you feed your contentment system. And that might just be a break for a cup of tea, it might be a little walk, a chat with a friend. You're not ignoring it, but there is a skill in me going, yeah, you're there, and letting it float away for the time being. Whether it's that worry time, you go, I'll be back for you at 6 o'clock tonight. Right. Going back to what everyone is saying as well, that although there's that, you cannot do it all the time. I get that. And again, I'm sorry to stick with actors. I've been working with actors for so long, but hopefully you'll forgive me. But you know, during that, or for any festivals, it's during that rehearsal time, during all of that, where it's, you know, it's virtually 24/7. That's all there is in your mind, and it's saying that's okay. You've maybe got 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks of that, and that's okay. But as long as you know at the end of that, you're going to chill. You're going to feed your contentment system. And I don't know if that helps, There are absolutely times in our life where we've got to ignore our contentment system, but you can't do it forever because that's creating that anxiety. That's coiling that spring. Yeah.
Yes.
No, but you know, there is a choice in that. I mean, I would sort of just amateur, but acting, directing. And every show I would go and see and go, don't know about that. I would maybe do that differently. And being able and not enjoying it, then you're not getting the joy out of your reading or whatever. Even watching television, you go, you know, maybe I would have a different camera angle there, or you know, or that was a wonderful camera angle. Wow, do you know, that's impressive. Is being able to discipline yourself, learn that skill of going, no. This is my contentment. It's not my work. And you can see they can overlap, but you can absolutely train yourself to go, no, yeah, let's just watch this film, watch this show, yeah, whatever it is, without that professional eye. Yes, and you can. Because if you're not, and it's going like that, you know, you can watch Netflix, you're seeing, but still be on your phone. Are you feeding your contentment system? Or are you feeding your drive system? You're feeding your drive system, yeah? And too much. There was a study, I'm way off script, by the way.
That's fine, we're enjoying
it. Okay, and I know there's only 10 minutes. And all the things I wanted to say, I'll need to come back. But there was a study a number of years ago with a nurse who did this study with end-of-life patients, and it was looking at all the things they maybe regretted. And that study shows, well, no one ever came out and said, I wish I had worked harder. No one came out and said, what they did come out and say, I wish I had had more fun. I wish I'd taken that time to have more fun. I wish I had spent more time with family and friends. And I can't remember what the top third one was. But that's the regrets with this study at the end of life. So, yeah, your job's important, drive is important, we listen to the threat, but what I'm trying to say is, yeah, that contentment is also important. If you don't want to build the anxiety that's there, find that time. And it might be 3 weeks hence where you go, I'm having a day off, not even thinking of work. And that can bring the balance. So it doesn't need to be a daily thing. Ideally, great, you know, but it doesn't have to be, as long as it's there and you find that balance. If you're sitting with that, and maybe if you're, that's what you're saying, that once that's that joy, that contentment is there, and you feel it, just, yeah, uncoiling, and that's what you're looking for, that anxiety has gone. Because we know that anxiety... Sorry. No, it's fine. I love to be interrupted. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think it's listening to those experiences, the experience that you've just shared, will hopefully start to convince people how important it is. And that when with that anxiety that you sit with, that the damage that it can do. Mm. Anxiety affects the heart. You can feel it in your body. Do you know, high blood pressure? And you go, well, there is a solution to that, is, you know, finding a way to reduce that anxiety, feeding your contentment system. It's one of the hardest things, as I say, I find when I say it to someone in the industry, in this industry, because they go, no, we're all drive, we're all threat, Mary. No time for that contentment stuff. Mm. And not until that burnout, until something happens, whether it's a physical health or mental health, until that, and then you go, right, okay. And everyone knows we can find time. And I absolutely appreciate the pressures and perhaps the time constraints and so on, the responsibility, Alison, as you see, but even if it is just going, you know, I'm going to go phone my friend for a wee bit. I'm going to go for a walk. That recharges the batteries. That feeds that contentment system. And you leave your phone at home. And I can't see your name. You leave your phone at home. Yes. You leave it in another room. So you're not tempted, yes, to do that, indeed. But the fallout from that anxiety, that stress, can be horrendous. And we don't want to wait to get to that stage for sure. Sorry. And I don't, is there something in leading by example? Do you remember after lockdown where some of the bigger organisations were giving their staff a duvet day? I'm not suggesting you do that just before festival opens, do you know? Maybe. But do you know, but I think it's that recognising that the pressures there are on other people, and once you're able to believe that, you know, share that, it's almost giving permission, isn't it, to say, and that trust that someone can open up and go, this is how I'm feeling, yeah? And it was part of today's talk where we talk about emotions, but it'll have to be for another time. But if you can be honest about the impact or recognise, and we're not encouraging people to skive or whatever, but actually being able to say, it's okay to take time for yourself every now and again. In fact, it's important, it's crucial, yeah.
Well, look, we're going into our last sort of 3 or 4 minutes of this session, so we've probably got time for one more question, or Mary, did you want to just round off, draw your comments to a close before we...
Maybe, and sorry, you had a question.
Yeah.
Ah. And I think that that's wonderful. And part of that is just accepting you being in the here and now, being in the moment, and running with it. It's not about the past. It's not about the future. It's about being in the here and now. And that reduces anxiety. And maybe just to finish, and I hear what you're saying, you know, about the stress, about the responsibilities, etc. And maybe going back to where I started was, where does that come from? What is there in you? What experience, you know, perhaps as a child that says, this is what you've got to do? Do you know, there will be something that you're that I am, do you know, that comes from childhood. And then questioning that and going, well, you know, how true is that? You know, that either, you know, if I don't do this, if I don't do everything, A, B, C, you know, it might be, then I will fail. You know, there's part of that perfectionist, you know, is that what's driving you? You know, those childhood experiences again, does that create a perfectionist? Does that create you must work hard or else? There's a belief. So going back to that is perhaps finding out what is the source of that and how true is it? Not saying, you know, you go the opposite, but that black and white thinking, is there a middle ground? Is there, you know, some grey in the middle where you can have that walk, leave your phone at home and come back and work to midnight? No, teasing.
Great. I think that's a great final point. Thank you. Thank you so much. Now, Mary has very kindly said that we can email her if we would like a follow-up session individually. Mm-hmm. Her email address is on the delegate list. She's around over lunchtime into the early part of the afternoon, I think, so there's opportunities for one-to-one chats. And just a reminder that if anybody had something they wanted to talk about quietly, we have got the other room just around the corner there for a more private session. So I think it just remains for me to say I'm overwhelmingly impressed by someone who described herself as shy and introverted, coming into a room full of people she's not met before and giving such a fluent and wise look at these difficult, often difficult matters to tackle. And thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.